Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Code and the Coding Coders Who Code It. I'm your host, Drew Bragg, and I'm joined today by Joe Mezzalotti. Joe, if someone has not had the pleasure of meeting you yet, could you please introduce yourself?
So my name is Joe. I am a Turbo Native developer, is how I like to call myself. I do a lot of Rails work, a lot of iOS stuff. I consult businesses on how to kind of port their Rails apps to iOS and then launch in the App Store. And I'm also the founder of Rails Devs, which is a hiring platform exclusively for Rails developers, which is also open source. So I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later. Yeah, it's not all over the place in my head, but it probably sounds like it to a lot of people. But yeah, iOS and Rails are my sweet spot.
You have your hands in some very interesting projects. So this is going to be a fun episode. For those of you who are new to the show, the way this is going to work is I'm going to ask Joe three questions. I'm going to ask what he's working on, which sounds like it's going to be pretty broad. I'm going to ask him about what blockers he has. And in the off chance that he doesn't have a current blocker, I'm going to ask him about a recent blocker he had and how he went about solving it. And then for the last segment, we're going to let Joe tell us something cool, new, or interesting that he's learned or discovered or built. And it doesn't even have to be coding related. So without any further ado, Joe, what are you working on?
Yeah, so a big focus of mine in January has been tightening down on the hiring fees associated with Rails devs. So a little bit of background there. I mentioned a little bit earlier that Rails devs is this recruiting platform just for Rails developers. And the way it works is businesses pay a monthly subscription. And then if they hire anyone through it, they pay me a 10% hiring fee. So way less than like a traditional recruiter, but also substantial when you're hiring folks for six figures, you know? So it's a big portion of the Rails devs revenue. And it's very important that I follow up with people and kind of shake out those hiring fees because it is 90% of the income of the business. And one of the things that wasn't in place until very recently was any real legal documentation around the hiring fee. So I had a little checkbox that you had to check that says, I agreed to pay 10% to Joe. You know, I'll email him when I hire someone. And what I've been working on recently is hiring a lawyer, working with that lawyer to get real terms on the website and require a signature before any money is transferred, before any accounts are created. Businesses will know that they have to pay the hiring fee, and then more details on like, here's how it works. Here's when you have to tell me. Here is the deadlines, all that good stuff.
Are you just finally getting around to that? Or was this kind of born of I had an issue where someone didn't want to pay and now I'm kind of going, I should have done this, but I got to do it now?
Both. So Rails Devs has been around for over a year now, which is crazy to think. I think I launched in October of 2021. So like just over a year.
Yeah.
And in that time, I know of 35 developers that have been placed into roles, which is super exciting.
That's fantastic.
Right? Yeah. Crazy numbers for just a year and just a solo business. But I know that there are at least five folks that have been hired outside of Rails Devs that should have been hired through the platform. And what sparked all of this was that there's a business that I'm working with, and I won't say names, that very clearly hired someone through the platform. I see their LinkedIn profile if they're working there. And then recently, they hired a second developer through the platform as well. And I know this only because I'm friends with that person. And it becomes an awkward situation because I don't really have anything besides a checkbox to point people to. And it was a long time coming in that, like, I told myself, hey, I'm a solo founder. There's a million things that I could be prioritizing right now. I could be working on making the messaging platform better, better notifications, bumping up developers to the top of the search results. And I'm not going to worry about this hiring fee until it becomes a real issue. And it's now a real issue. I have a business that has escaped, that I know of, escaped the hiring fee twice. And this was kind of the final straw where I was like, okay, I need something to be able to point people to and say, you did not follow these terms. You are beholden to them and we need to figure it out. Otherwise, I'm going to kick you off the platform and I'm sorry because you didn't follow the rules. So it's live now. You can, if you sign up for an account, you'll see it, you'll sign it. It's like pretty short. It's only like a couple paragraphs, which I really worked on to make human readable. It's not like really legal speak. But now I have the hard problem of trying to enforce it with businesses. And in the past, this hasn't been an issue. I've had a lot of honest, awesome businesses that work with me and are so excited. We're supporting an indie business. We're supporting another Rails developer. Here is the money. Like, how can we pay you? but not everyone has been that way. It's a real business now. It's not a little side project. If you followed me online at all, I'm very public about these numbers. Rails devs brought in $150K last year. And as a solo business, that is all getting reinvested back in the business or going into my pocket. So it's not a little side project anymore. It's a significant part of my independent business. So I need to make sure that I get paid for that work.
I feel you on the, there are better things you could be working on, or as the solo founder, like there are things that potentially are better for the business, and especially because doing any kind of legal stuff does not sound fun. It doesn't sound like the thing that would get me up in the morning to be like, today I'm going to solve my legal issues. So I feel that like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this, but now I have to.
I will say that when there is $20,000 riding on the line, it makes you a little more excited to talk to a lawyer and pay a couple thousand dollars to get a document in place. Usually money doesn't motivate me often, but when I knew that was sitting on the table, if I didn't get it done, it's a damn good kick in the butt to get me excited to talk to someone.
Yeah, I feel like 20K will motivate most anybody to do the thing that they don't want to do. And you said that any of the money that you're making right now is going back into the business or is essentially your paycheck. But correct me if I'm wrong, you're also contributing back to the community with some of the portions. Anytime someone's hired, you're finding organizations in the community to donate at least a portion of it to, right?
That's correct. 10% of all profit goes to, in all of 2022, I donated 10% of profits to women or non-binary led Ruby or Rails communities. So a lot of this went to like WNBRB, the Women on Rails newsletter, and a lot of these, the smaller type communities that are led by, like I said, a woman or non-binary and focused on those folks. So what I'm going to be doing with the 10% of profits in 2023 is not decided yet. That's actually something that I'm still kind of figuring out. It worked really well last year. I was really excited. It was actually, it came out to $10,000 in contributions, which is crazy. Yeah, like after profits and after thousands of dollars of Stripe's fees, like it was 10K in contributions to folks. And that's a huge number. And that's like significant in changing a little community's course of action.
Absolutely.
So looking forward to figuring out either a new partner or continuing to work with WNBRB in the future to figure out like where best that money will go.
All right. That's awesome. That is a huge number, I think, for the community to just have pumped back into it. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, that benefits all of us, right? Our community grows and improves and all of us in the community reap the benefits of that. So I appreciate that. And the other thing that I wanted to at least give you a chance to talk a little bit about is Rails Dev being an open source platform, because I think that is one of the coolest bits about it, especially when I think of it from a junior developer standpoint. When we're doing hiring, we're always asking anybody coming in for an interview, if you have any open source contributions or code in general, but generally open source contributions that you want to talk about, they can bring that instead of doing any kind of take-home coding challenge or pairing challenge. And I think it's so cool that someone could be on Rails Devs and their contribution to open source could be onto the very platform that they are job hunting on. Was that planned out that way? Or was the open source just like, oh, I'm going to build in public and maybe I'll get some help. Oh, cool. This is working out really well. Or was like that sort of the plan from the get-go?
It was a little bit of both. I selfishly made Rails Devs open source, to be frank. I am always like diving through GitHub and I'm like, okay, there's these really cool open source low level libraries or gems that I can contribute to. But I kind of lose interest in like the low level kind of backend plumbing and stuff. If it doesn't have a UI, I'm less excited about it. It's sad, but true. And I kind of dug through and realized that there are very few fully open source full applications for Rails and Ruby. There's the big ones like Form and what is it? Discord, I believe, like their server is now running on Rails. I tried to get those code bases running on my machine and it took a very long time because there are huge code bases. Like no dig to the maintainers, like there's a lot of steps involved. And I was like, if I'm a developer who wants to contribute to something that I can actually go to the website and see the changes the next day, I have nowhere to go. And that's where I feel Rails Devs fills this really awesome slot in the open source space where the getting started guide is like three steps. It's like, make sure you have Brew and Ruby installed and I'll take care of the rest with a Brew upgrade script and like a bin setup type thing. And if you can do that and you can kick off Postgres, you're off to the races. And I have tons of details on every single platform that you're running on from contributors. So it's really easy to get the app up and running. A good testament to that will actually be next weekend. We're doing a local hackathon in Portland. And me and Jared White are the two folks who are kind of sponsoring the project. People will be hacking on Bridgetown and on Rails Devs for like 5 hours on next Saturday.
Nice. So
really excited to see the type of issues and bugs that pop out of that and all of the contributions that get made. But to go back to your original question, like, was it open source on purpose or was it more of where it came from? Once I decided that it was going to be open source, it really led the rest of the business decisions to be so easy. Being open and being transparent trumps everything else. If I can share something and it's not going to hurt the business, I'm going to share it. This includes, as I spoke about, revenue numbers, contribution numbers, all my expenses, how many developers are on the platform, how many people are hiring, all of the decisions that go into the business, and all the way down to the analytics and source code. And making that decision to be open source, it was kind of like my branding for the app. It's like everything is open, transparent by default. And everything that I talk about is built on those values of share as much as possible. And it has been amazing, the support that I've gotten through this. There have been over 50 developers that have contributed to the source code. There's like 500 stars on GitHub. It's like by far one of my most popular projects by a long shot. And those numbers are vanity metrics in my mind. What I'm most excited about is that 10 people, last I checked, contributed their first open source contribution, and it was to the Rails Devs platform.
Yep.
And that is crazy. Like 10 different people have sought out the platform, signed up for a GitHub account, reached out to me for help, and we got their first commit in the system. And one of those was not trivial. It was like part of the messaging platform that is very core to the application. It wasn't a tiny bug fix or even like a YAML change. Some of them were, which is fine. It's really exciting to see that. And it's really exciting to work with those people. There was even a developer who I talked about at the Rails SaaS talk who got hired directly from their contributions to Rails Devs. Their current employer saw them making changes on GitHub and emailed them and was like, hey, your changes look really in line with what we're building. Do you want to interview? And he had a job in like 2 days. Like, that's crazy.
So awesome.
That's crazy. Like, just from, and like, it makes me wonder how many other apps could be open source and could be like websites and code bases and Rails ecosystem and expanded too. But how many other things could be open source? You look at the code, it's pretty boring. There's not much exciting stuff going on. There's like one turbo stream. That's like the most exciting thing going on.
That's
in the
why
app.
I like it.
Right?
That's what I like. The boring stuff is the good stuff. You're going to go far with that.
So it's not like the Rails Devs code base is the secret sauce to the business.
Right, right. No, I remember you talking about it at Rails SaaS. That is one of the, if not the coolest stories I have heard from open source, of someone getting hired by doing an open source contribution to a job board, like platform. Like, it is just such a beautiful story for the Rails community, especially for you, who very vocal about like, let's hire juniors. It's like, let's hire juniors, and it's happening.
Yeah, exactly.
So many avenues to make it happen. It's so great. And it's funny that you brought up your Rails SaaS talk, because I almost was going to talk to you about it a little bit and just ask you to talk a little bit for those. Is your video out yet? Or
yeah, it went live last week as of this recording. So it'll definitely be live when this airs.
Awesome. I will make sure it's in the show notes, because it was a great talk.
Thank you.
You did a great job on it. And I think the message is incredibly important. I know it's kind of a weird time to be talking about hiring. There's a lot of layoffs in the tech community and things going on. Have you noticed any of that in the number of businesses that are hiring?
Yeah.
Has it been a lot, or has it been less than you were expecting?
So in December, I saw the highest churn I've seen on Rails Devs. A fair amount of businesses left the platform because they either weren't hiring anymore, their budget ran out, or they hired someone and it was like end of year. So they were like, let's clean up some expenses. But January has been the most businesses joining Rails Devs, 2x of the previous best month, which is insane, because it seems like hiring in Rails is not slowing down at all. If you look at these numbers,
yeah,
like two people signed up today for an account. That's never happened before, two people in the same day. So I'm really excited about how many people I'll be able to connect with these new businesses on the platform. And if this is any indication of where our industry is going, it's like Rails is not slowing down right now.
I keep seeing the layoffs. I keep seeing the people looking for jobs because their department closed or they got laid off from something downsizing all across the board. And then I look around and there's a ton of Rails shops hiring. And I'm like, is it just that Rails companies happen to be immune to this? Or is it just big tech? But I don't have any empirical evidence to back this up, but it does seem very much like businesses on Rails are not slowing their hiring down. And if anything, they're ramping them up. Certainly not true for all businesses, but there is a fair amount of businesses on Rails that are still like, nah, we're rocking and rolling.
Yeah. I obviously only deal with a very small portion of the entire Rails industry, from developers to businesses. But if I can use mine as like a sampling, then I would totally agree.
Yeah, I think it's a good sampling. Generally, Rails, I mean, Shopify, GitHub, Cookpad, all those aside, you're generally talking about a slightly smaller company running Rails. So I think where the companies that you have on your platform hiring is a really good kind of sampling of the Rails ecosystem as a whole. Something that I know you're going to be excited to talk about, and I'm excited to hear all about, is Turbo Native. Mm-hmm. You recently gave the first round of the Turbo Native workshop. How did it go?
So real quick, Turbo Native is a framework that's built on top of Hotwire. It's part of Turbo, but I kind of think of it as like its own little thing. And what it does is it allows you to connect your existing mobile website powered up by Rails and Hotwire and kind of put it in a mobile app native type experience. So you still render your web views inside of the mobile app, but you get to add a lot of Swift or Kotlin to it to make it feel more native or upgrade screens as you go. The big benefit is that you can launch across all three platforms, web, iOS, and Android, with a very small dev team. I mean, Rails Devs is on the App Store right now, and I'm the only developer working on that. So like a testament right there. But apps like Basecamp and Hey run on Turbo Native. So I ran a workshop for 15 Rails developers in December about kind of how to go from like zero to App Store. So how to go from Xcode new, you know, Rails new equivalent, all the way to integrating with their existing Rails apps in a 3-hour workshop. And I think I live coded for 2.5 hours.
That is scary to think about.
Which like is great. I loved it. I love live coding. It gives me a lot of energy. But I think that there was a lot that I missed in terms of where I could have touched on more or like what was important for the workshop. And that showed with a lot of the feedback that I got. So a lot of the folks that came into it were like, this was amazing, but it was way too much for 3 hours. This was amazing, but I don't know iOS, and you kind of glossed over all of that. So I have all of this really good feedback that I'm using to now kind of rebuild the workshop, rethink it a little bit, and focus instead of these advanced Turbo Native features that you might need for most of your apps or some of your apps, and focusing more on what every single app will need. So every single app, you're going to need to have someone that knows iOS, that can open Xcode, can fiddle with the Xcode settings, and can write a little bit of Swift. You're going to need an app that does authentication. You're going to need an app that's able to route different screens to different parts, maybe throw in some native code there, and you're going to need to do push notifications. Those are kind of the big four pillars. If you can hit on all four of those, you're probably at a good point where you can submit to the App Store. So rethinking this workshop, the second session, I don't know when it's coming. I really want to make it great. Hopefully in the next few months, though, like February, March would be ideal. That is going to be way more fine-tuned, way more of folks taking part in the exercises with take-home activities and pairing off into groups and doing things together instead of kind of watching me live code for 3 hours, which while beneficial and that recording is super valuable, that's not a workshop to me. A workshop to me is folks hands on the keyboard doing their own stuff. And I think that will also open it up to a lot wider audience. I kind of required folks to have a little bit of iOS experience for that first one. Now you can come in and all you have to do is have Xcode installed on your machine, which is going to open it up to, ideally, the goal, every single Rails developer out there.
It's exciting. And I really wanted to participate in the workshop just because I'm so interested in, it's very mysterious. to me, all of that, because it's not unlike the rest of Rails. It's hard to Google for, hey, how do I do this or how do I do that, and find a lot of stuff on it. So it's one of those things where I'm at least interested to be comfortable in it. And I wasn't able to do the first workshop. That's why I was really excited to be like, so how did it go? Are you doing another one? I hope so. Fingers crossed. Because I do want to make it out to one. Not that my job, we don't even have an app and we have no plans to have an app, but just for my own, it's a part of the Rails ecosystem that I at least want to be comfortable knowing that I don't know a lot, but can, if I had to touch it, I could. And that sounds like where the direction you're taking the workshop. So perfect.
Yeah, I do think that there is still a lot of value a business or an individual can get, even if they have no plans to do a Turbo Native app, mostly because a lot of the stuff that I'm teaching is like, here are best practices to make your Rails app work better with a Turbo Native app in the future. And a lot of those things are like data action replace. Have you ever used data action replace on a link or a form or whatever?
No.
Yeah. And what it does on the web is that it doesn't add something to the back stack. It kind of like replaces the current screen, which doesn't really matter ever because you don't really care about the back stack unless you're really messing something up. On Turbo Native, if you push a screen and like you have a new screen on the stack, it's a totally different experience from an iOS or an Android perspective because you have the native animation happening. So a lot of that stuff that isn't even on your radar yet is really interesting, I think, for Rails developers, because it does dive into parts of Turbo that I know I never touched until I dealt with Turbo Native.
Yeah. And it's funny, we were just talking about this at work today, that there's just so much to Rails. It's impossible to keep it all in your head, but it is so incredibly helpful to at least experience it all. And just to know something exists in that space, even if you'd go, hey, I have to figure out how to do X. I don't know what method to use. I don't know how to exactly do it, but I do know Rails does it for me, or I do know that there's a way to do it through X. And so I think even just those dip your toes in the water type exercises and workshops are so beneficial to feeling extremely confident as a developer.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a whole nother kind of like paradigm of learning dealing with Turbo Native. You want to Google something for Rails, you can check out the Rails guides, you can check out the source code, or maybe you go to the API doc or whatever. More or less, you're going to find what you need in those, unless it's pretty esoteric and you need to find someone's blog on it. With Turbo Native, there's so little content out there. There's just so little content. And if you're not on the demo app in the two repos, or my website, you're hard pressed to find anything else that's out there right now. And that's not good. Yeah, it's fun to be the only person writing about Turbo Native, but we're not going to elevate other folks with just one person doing it. So I'm excited to start spreading the love a little bit, start getting other people interested in it, and ideally have more folks contributing back and creating more content.
Yeah, it's very exciting thing to have more of any documentation, because documentation comes in so many forms. It's not just Rails guides or API docs. It's those blog posts, those video series. Those all, in my mind, contribute to what you would consider documentation. Speaking of live coding and videos, you recently did a live coding of a feature for Rails devs where you were adding a referral link. And it was a really fun just video to watch. I participated a little bit, but do you have plans to do more of those? Can we look forward to those in the future?
Yes, and yes. A little bit of background on that. Rails devs has this MVP to the max referral program built in right now, where if you're interested, you like literally send me an email. I open up the IRB console and I generate 6 random capital letters and I write it back to you, and that's your referral code. And if you link anyone to Rails devs ?ref equals your unique referral code, they get a cookie for 30 days. And if they sign up for an account in those 30 days, you've officially referred that person to the site. If they become a paying business, you're entitled to 10% of their revenue. And that includes the monthly subscription. So that's like $30 a month in your pocket for every month they sign up, or a hiring fee. So if they hire someone for 150K, that's 15K hiring fee, you're getting $1,500 just from, you know, that referral code. So
Yeah.
Pretty big numbers. If you're interested, definitely send me an email or Twitter or DM. But like in terms of the scaffolding that exists on the website and in the code base, I think the whole PR was like 30 lines. It's like save the cookie. And then when they sign up, write that cookie to the, you know, create a new model, like a referral model, a new table and database. And the live coding was really fun for me too, because I hadn't done it before. I was, okay, I have this idea. I know I need to save a cookie. I know it needs to expire in 30 days. I know I need a new model. But everything else was just done live. Like I spent an hour on it and it was literally live coding. It wasn't like, oh, I've done this 15 times and I can kind of type it out for you and talk. I was debugging. I had failing tests for 25 minutes. I needed help from Twitter. Like Andrew Mason and Connor Rogers were live tweeting me with like, oh, you forgot to do this. And Marco Roth was like, you forgot to add this parameter. Yeah. And this wasn't nested correctly. Like it was a lot of fun. And there are two, if not three more issues that come off of that. One is like building a dashboard to see those. One is actually setting up a way to track those referrals. And I'm really looking forward to doing more of those live streaming sessions because folks seem to love them. And I really like doing them too. And a little secret behind the scenes is that they don't require a lot of prep work.
Right.
Because I'm doing something live, because the goal of it is to wing it and to watch my brain work. Any prep I do before that is actually taking away from the experience. So going into it cold, so to speak, is easier. It's less work, but also more fun for everyone. And yes, I know I'm not going to be able to like extract a polished video out of this, but that's okay. That's not the goal. The goal is to have a little bit of fun on YouTube or whatever I'm streaming, Twitter, wherever I'm streaming to, and get more people involved in the project. And I think that achieved its goal just from there. So definitely look forward to more of those. I'll be announcing them mostly on Twitter and then my newsletter as well.
It was a lot of fun, especially the dialogue on Twitter when we were trying to help you debug stuff as it's coming up and we're catching this. Oh, try that. It was a lot of fun. And I think especially not just the, oh yeah, here's how you do it. Like these are the bits of syntax to use. It's always so fun to watch someone live code in the way that you're talking about, not this hyper prepped. I've done it so many times and now I'm just regurgitating it in a planned out format, but the real live coding. You get such a benefit from learning how someone else thinks and debugs and approaches a problem, even if it's completely different than how you would do it. Just knowing the other avenues of approach for something like that is so beneficial to anybody. So I am looking forward to your next one. And for anyone listening, definitely keep tabs on Joe because you don't want to miss the next one. They are invaluable to your career at any level.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun. And definitely still figuring out the right streaming medium, if that makes sense. Like I was playing around with StreamYard, which is really fun. I can set up StreamYard and it will stream to Twitter. It'll stream to YouTube. It'll stream to Twitch, which is like, great. I can be on all the platforms at once. And then I'm like, I have three live chats over on the side. I need like someone to help me monitor the live chat. So
right.
I think in the future, I'm probably going to just go to Twitter or just go to YouTube or, you know, keep it in one platform and kind of announce it everywhere else, because it was great to get all that live chat feedback on Twitter, but I totally missed everyone that responded on YouTube. So apologies to everyone that commented there.
Yeah, that's a lot to manage one stream of chat, let alone three, while you're trying to actively live code. I don't think I could do that. I think my ADHD would kick in way too fast and it would be over before it started the first time I had to look at more than one chat. Oh no. Which actually, that brings me to our next question. Perfect segue. What kind of blockers do you have? And if you don't have one, what kind of blockers have you had recently and how are you tackling them?
So something that I've been blocked on for over a year now is splitting out accounts and teams from the user model on Rails devs. It is becoming more and more embarrassing to admit. I've tried to tackle this, I think, five different times. I've worked with two consultants to help me with it and two other people on open source. You can see the 55 comment thread on the GitHub issue about us going back and forth. The goal is like, so simple on paper. I want businesses and developers to be able to manage multiple accounts. So a business can have multiple users. So, you know, an HR manager versus a hiring manager versus a CTO can all message people on the same account. And if there's ever a developer team that wants to join, they can have multiple people managing their account as well, or like a secretary to manage an individual dev. I did not add this feature when I launched Rails Devs. I wish I launched this feature with Rails Devs. And if you are launching a new product, listen to everyone else and include teams in your MVP.
In my head right now, Andrew Mason is busting through your wall like the Kool-Aid man going, did someone say data modeling?
Yeah.
Because they just were talking about this on Remote Ruby. And I know that Andrew Culver has brought it up repeatedly yeah, about like its first party in Bullet Train. And it is so funny how I feel you are not the only person who has gotten burned by this. And we all talk about it and we all go, I've been burned by this. And we continue to be burned by it because we don't think our side project's going to get there. And it does. So yes, Joe, great suggestion for everybody else. Do it from the get-go.
Yep. I just read an article from Andrew Culver. I don't think it's new. It's about how teams and accounts are essentially table stakes, and they should be table stakes for your MVP. And
yeah.
As I'm reading it, I'm just like, my head is sinking further and further into my arm. I'm just like, oh my God, he's so right. I so messed up. I wish I could go back and change it. And I look at it from two perspectives. From a development side, there is a lot of work to do. There's a lot of like data migration. There's a lot of stuff that needs to happen both synchronously and asynchronously to get it all lined up. I have to move paid accounts over, which is terrifying to me. And hopefully everyone else, because it's like, it's hard to test and it's very important if someone can't access their paid account anymore. But there's also this other side of all of the product questions that come from this and things that would have been way easier if I had done them incrementally instead of all at once.
Hey.
Simple questions like, how does the person's name appear in a contact, essentially in a conversation, if they are an account manager versus like the person who signed up? Should it say the person's name who signed up? Should it say the CTO's name or the recruiter's name? Or should it say the person who sent the message? And little decisions like that are so easy to answer on their own, but on the whole, they completely change the course of the product and they completely change kind of like the value and proposition of what you're offering. So every single one of those needs to be looked at together, not only on its own. And my God, it has been just very difficult and it's only getting harder. And it's coming to the point where I'm like, we might just never have teams. We might just be sharing passwords until Rails Devs explodes, which makes me happy, but pushes me away from ever signing like a big corporate client. That's the big problem. It's like, if I ever want to have Shopify on Rails Devs, well, I'm going to probably need to have a single sign-on as well, but that's a different story. I'm going to definitely need to have teams and accounts. And me being the solopreneur that I am, trying to be pragmatic about all this, I think I'll wait until that happens. Because of all the businesses that have asked me, hey, do you have teams or can I invite my coworker? And I tell them, nope, just share your password. Not a single one has responded and said, no, that doesn't work for us. Everyone has either ignored it or been like, okay, that's fine, or responded and said, great, love that you're scrappy. So it makes it even harder to push that route because
right.
No one actually needs it currently on the current user base that it's stopping them from using the platform. And that makes the decision even harder and means I'm going to probably in a year when we have this conversation again, I'm going to be saying, Drew, I wish that I did it a year ago when things were simpler. And now it's even twice as complicated because I have 10 times as much code. But for now, I'm going to just keep shooting myself in the foot and we'll see what happens.
Foot gun. The mythical, the magical foot gun of, I know I need it, but I don't actually need it. So back burner it goes.
Self-care at its finest.
That is a solid blocker and a good learning lesson for anybody listening who's about to start a solo project. Teams by default, teams and accounts.
Yeah, or just like start with Jumpstart or start with Bullet Train and have them do it for you. Or download a copy of Bullet Train or buy a license to Jumpstart. See how they do it in there and learn from that and build one that works for you.
Yeah, both those guys have a ton of experience making apps in Rails. And like, there's a reason why they come with teams and accounts out of the box. Yeah.
And teams and accounts that work really well and you can switch between them and deactivate and manage and admin and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Don't reinvent the wheel if you can copy paste the wheel, so to speak.
I like that. Don't reinvent the wheel if you can copy paste it. I can't count the number of times I'm just like, I should have done this thing with my, not even just teams or accounts, just data modeling in general. When I was listening to the Remote Ruby episode where I'm pretty sure it was Andrew talking about like wanting to get good at data modeling. I'm like, yes, because it's so freaking important. It makes your life so much easier if you're good at it. it's amazing how much better it makes your life if you get good at it. But it's also incredible how hard it is to learn about. I mean, there are things like teams and accounts that are kind of default, but a lot of times it's so business specific or project specific. There is no like, oh, this is how you do X.
Exactly.
It's just getting a feel for data and how it needs to get modeled in databases.
So true. And I think the one bit that I've picked up over the years is that never assume your data model is correct. And if you go in with that mentality that you know you're going to change it in the future, even if you think it's perfect right now, it's perfect for your current guidelines and your current user needs and your current product requirements. In a week that could change, or in a year that could change. But I think it's more important to be better at changing existing modeling than getting it right the first time.
Right.
It takes a lot of pressure off that first, you know, generator or what have you, getting it right the first time and being able to change that in the future to make it work with the way you need, and knowing how to do migration safely, knowing how to migrate data safely, and coming up with either a recipe or a process for your team to migrate that type of data. Is it on deploy? Is it automatic? Is it a separately run rake task? Is it zero downtime? All of that stuff to me is way more important than like ship it once and then pray that it actually will never be changed.
Yeah.
Which never happens.
Be prepared for things to change is 100%. That's the golden rule. Things will change.
Yeah.
Well, now on to a happy, fun topic. What's something cool or new or interesting that you've recently stumbled upon, learned, did? It doesn't have to be coding related. It can be the story of how you got that giant Lego man head on your bookcase behind you, whatever you want it to be.
That Lego on my bookshelf is from like high school, I'm pretty sure. So I have no idea how it got here or what's inside or anything. But one of the things that I've been really excited about recently, kind of my New Year's resolution, kind of a new outlook, kind of a new way of thinking about time I spend in front of a computer. 2022, I worked a fair amount, more than I wanted to. And I left a lot of days thinking that I didn't really get a lot accomplished. I would be on my computer from 8 a.m., kid goes to daycare, I'd take a break. I'd be on from 9 to 5, and then he would go to bed. And I'd be on it again from like 7 to 9 or something at night. Like working like really long days, but not feeling very accomplished at the end of every day. And I think that a lot of it was because I had 1,000 things going on last year. And I didn't really have any focus on when things should be prioritized or what I should prioritize or how. So my intention for this year is a little bit different. And one of my big goals is to actually spend less time in front of a computer. One of my goals is that I'm now tracking 100% of my time in front of a computer. And at the end of every week, I'm looking at that list and I'm saying, wow, why was I online from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesday? What was I doing that was so important that couldn't wait until Wednesday morning? And there are times where I might need to do that, where I might need to scramble to get a newsletter done or a client needs something. But that's not the norm. And what I've realized with this, even only of a month of doing it, is that a lot of times I sit down on my machine with nothing to do. I just feel comfortable being in front of a computer pretending to work, so to speak. I've been self-employed for 3 years now. I've been remote for almost 8 on my own, kind of working in a remote space for a remote company, and then now on my own for 3 years. You'd think I'd like kind of have figured that out by now. But something about last year really stuck with me where I wasn't getting fulfilled of what I was doing. So this year is very different. Every day, I start the day with 3 to-do items and not a single more. If I finish those 3 to-do items, I'm done for the day. I sign off, I close my machine, I step away, I go for a walk, I go for a hike, I go for a bike ride, whatever, what have you. I set out 3 intentions for the week. My 3 to-dos for the week should build up to those 3 intentions. And I set 3 goals for each quarter. And those 3 goals for each quarter bubble up to 3 goals for the year. If I finish those goals, if I finish those daily to-dos, I shouldn't be on my computer anymore. There's no reason to be working more if I've already done what I need to do for the day. And this mindset shift has really changed how I think about and how I do work. If you've noticed, I'm not on Twitter as much anymore. I'm doing more things that I'm excited about. I'm not doing things that don't help the business. I'm experimenting less and doubling down on things that I know that are working. And it's been a weird experience because I'm cutting things that I thought were fun and maybe liked, but it also means that I'm able to focus on the things that really matter. And business-wise, there are a lot of those that I want to keep going. But also, outside of that, I have my family, I have my life, I have my friends, I have stuff that I want to do that I wasn't doing because I was just sitting in front of a computer. And I think that this is my way of dealing with burnout. I definitely was burned out by the end of last year. And I think that this was my escape hatch or my safety mechanism for when I'm feeling burnout is to kind of work more in front of a computer more.
Know how that feels. Yeah.
And this has helped a lot. So I don't know if this will last. I don't know if this is kind of like a reset for me, but I'm very excited about it. And it's been very eye-opening to see when I shut down my computer on Sunday night and I look back on the past week and it's like, wow, I spent 40 hours in front of a computer, or I spent 20 hours in front of a computer, and how I feel comparing those 2 days, those 2 weeks has been really interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that, that is your approach to this is I have three to-dos and this is what I'm doing. I was dealing with probably similar to you, symptom of burnout towards getting to the end of the year last year, where I wasn't feeling like I was productive. I wasn't feeling like I was accomplishing as much as I know I was. Like, I have a one-on-one with my CTO every week, and she tells me all the time that I'm doing great. And if I'm ever saying, like, I don't feel like I am doing enough, I need to do more, is there anything I can do to help the team more? She'll throw PRs at me. So it's like, it's not that I'm not doing things. It's that I don't feel good about what I'm doing, or I'm not recognizing it. So I started journaling towards the end of the year last year. I got a journal called the Hero's Journal, and in it, it breaks things down a lot. And the one thing it has is to seize the day list, and it's three to-dos. These are the to-dos I have to do today in order to say I have seized the day. So the first thing I do every morning is like I pick three things that I have to do. And it's a little different than what you're saying. Like, those aren't, I do those three things and I'm done. Sometimes it's like, make sure I drink water all throughout the day and stay hydrated, because for some reason I'm almost 36 years old and still have trouble with that. I don't know. But like, that is my to-do. And if I do it, I check the box. And then at the end of the week, I can look back and be like, I don't know why I don't feel like I accomplished anything. Every single day, I got my three things done. It has helped at least my mental state. Whether or not I'm actually getting any more work done, probably not, but doesn't matter. I feel better about my week and my days. So it's interesting that you said that you pick three to-dos. Was there a book, like a approach that, like I said, I have the Hero's Journal, and that's kind of how it was like, here, you're doing three things. In addition to like the daily gratitudes and recognizing what is helping. I really love this journal, but not the point I'm trying to make. How did you come up with the three to-dos to get your day done?
I also have a journal. It's from Papier. I don't know how to pronounce it. P-A-P-I-E-R. You can like customize the front and do different colors and fonts, and it's fun. My name is in the bottom, if you can see that, which is really cool.
Nice.
But every day you have a to-do list that is pick your three most important things and then your other stuff. And I look at the other stuff as like, if I don't do these, they don't get pushed off to tomorrow. They just don't get done. If they're not important enough to make it to the top three important things, then they don't get done. And that mindset shift and that way of thinking about things has really freed me up to focus on what's important. I just got a book called 4,000 Weeks or something. Does that sound familiar? 20,000 weeks? Essentially, it's like how long every human lives. Very morbid, but it's all about time management for mortals. And one of the big pulls from it is that like the faster you move, the longer your to-do list gets, because you keep adding more things and you need more time. You need more time to do all the things. But if you slow down and you focus on the things that you want to focus on, your to-do list gets shorter because you're actually doing them and not just perpetually adding things. All of this kind of amalgamated into me realizing that if I maybe slow down a little bit and focus on what matters, I'll feel more fulfilled at the end of the day, like you were saying. I won't have burnout. I feel like I actually accomplished things. Yes, I'll hopefully still be making the same income as a self-employed, trying to support a family with my wife. That's very important. Yep. But if I feel like shit, it doesn't matter how much money I'm making. So I totally resonate with you there in terms of not feeling fulfilled and not feeling accomplished. And for some reason, writing things down that you do really helps.
Yeah, it's amazing. Such a simple task, but it is so impactful. And I was trying something similar with, like, I use Obsidian, mm-hmm. not power user style, not second brain style, but just as like daily notes, things of that nature. And it wasn't having the same effect. But yeah. for some reason, the physically taking a pen and writing it down on paper and physically checking that box, it's like, and maybe this will wear off, but like, man, checking that box feels good. Mm-hmm. Like, feels really good.
Yeah.
It motivates me. So I don't know what it is, but it works. I don't care what it is. It yeah, works.
It works.
You know, if it works. So
are you doing your journaling by hand or on a computer?
Yeah. 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 I know podcast people, sorry, you won't be able to see my journal, but nice. Yeah, I actually have to fill in the third to do. Sometimes I leave the third to do blank if I don't have anything.
Wild card.
And then I just put something that I've done as the third to do and I go, whatever, I did it.
Woke up.
Check. It's fine. But yeah, no, it's cool. I'm always looking for ways of tricking my brain into enjoying something that sounds terrible. And like, journaling to me sounds terrible. I never liked writing. I have atrocious handwriting. I've broken my hands so many times that I hold a pen goofy as hell. But this Heroes journal, I'm like a little bit of a fantasy and sci-fi nut. And they have two different journals. One's like very much your traditional almost D&D style. And the other is like in space. And it's not story as much as it's just like little pictures or like, because it's a Heroes journal, I am on my quest to like yeah. do the thing. And at the end of every week, when I'm doing the reflections, I like, what did all of my stuff, did it make me a stronger person? Did it make me wiser? Did it make me this, that, the other thing? So those are the points that I'm gaining. And it's just, it's little and it sounds potentially dumb, but it tricks my brain into enjoying it and doing it. And that's all that I care about, is tricking my brain into doing the thing, whether it's gamifying it or going, okay, cool, if I do it every day, then this is the reward I get at the end of the week. Whatever. It doesn't matter as long as it works. And that's what works for me.
I love that. And I love that it turned it into a little bit of like almost a trope where you're leveling up your character and
yeah.
your human and yourself. It definitely gamifying it. And I love that. Really love the idea of theming it and making sure that it stands out and is unique to you. And like, yeah, you might be bored of that and might be jaded of that in 6 months or in 2 years. But by then, maybe you know that you can just do this on your own and like a journal on its own. Or it means you get the space theme. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the ends to the meet. It's like, it's the journey of getting there. It's the journey of feeling better about yourself that matters way more than like how you got there, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, definitely. It just was very cool that you said, this is how I'm doing things. This is how I'm approaching 2023. And I'm like, that sounds very familiar. Like, maybe we're on to something here.
Yeah, right. I'm sure I like heard it on a podcast or like read it somewhere and I'm like, oh, I don't know, I just came up with it, but it's the way that's working for me.
Sure.
I did write about this pretty extensively on my blog on January 2nd about like my intentions for the year and how I felt with all of this. So if anyone listening like wants to dive into that a little bit more, we'll put a link in the show notes to that blog post. On the title is Being More Intentional in 2023.
I will absolutely have that in the show notes. I believe it's actually in my reader of things to read, but it will 100% make it into the show notes along with a ton of the other stuff that we've talked about. Before we wrap up, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about, go into anything?
I feel like we've covered all of the stuff that I do, which is super exciting. And we really didn't even dive into like, what is my main source of income, which is consulting with businesses and getting their Rails app on iOS and in the App Store. But I feel like for the folks that listen to this, talking about the day-to-day coding and the Rails devs and stuff makes a lot more sense. So,
sure. Well, we'll just have to have you back on to go down that rabbit hole. So for those who are interested in the next round of Turbo Native workshops or just following your blog or anything like that, where can you be found on the internet?
Yeah, most of my stuff is on maserati.com. There'll be a link in the show notes. I don't expect you to be able to spell that. I tweet at Joe Maserati. And if you want to go right to the Turbo Native stuff, it's turbonativeworkshop.com.
Great. Well, I will put all of that in the show notes. Thanks for coming on, Joe. It was a blast having you on, getting to catch up a little bit and picking your brain on all the cool things you have going on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was a blast. I always love recording. It definitely gives me a lot of energy for the rest of the day. But today I'm going to go lie down on the couch because this was the third thing on my to-do list. So,
hey, there you go. I'm happy we could check it off and give you an accomplished day. All right, everyone, catch you in the next episode.